my gosh.
Deep to right field. Way up there and way out.
Swing and a miss.
Hey guys, and welcome to Broad Street to Britain, a UK Phillies podcast, episode number 20, and it's a Christmas special. Oh, that's right. You didn't ask for it, but you've got it, and you all didn't know you wanted it until now. So I am joined by, of course, Ryan Owen from Road to Tricks. Ryan, how are you, buddy?
Oh, Merry Christmas, one and all. It's been a great few months, and I'm glad to be back on the Phillies train with you guys.
And you all set for Christmas?
Yes, I'm prepared. I'm organised. I'm good at organisation. The creativity side is less good, but the presents are bought and away we go.
Alex Carr, how are you, mate? What's been happening since we last spoke? Are you ready for Christmas?
Oh, I am very ready. I have presents of plenty, a lot of Christmas cheer. It is abundant within my soul. I absolutely love the holidays, even though I'm Jewish. You know, it happens to the best of us, but I'm very excited, and I can't wait to be back. I'm very excited to be here talking about some really exciting news that's happened over the last couple of months.
And what does Christmas entail for you, Alex? What you got planned?
I'm going to North Carolina, Dave. I am going to go spend the holidays with my girlfriend and her lovely family, her 5 siblings, her 7 pets. And we're going to have a blast.
Oh, awesome. Cold, though, North Carolina in winter?
It is freezing, yeah. Especially, she's up in the mountains, my girlfriend's family and her. So it's going to be quite the journey.
Is there much snow? Is it a white Christmas, usually around Christmas time?
It was last year, so I don't know if it's going to snow by the time we get up there. But we'll see. I hope so. I love a white Christmas.
Oh, I've never experienced one. It's just rain, wet, miserable. I don't know about you, Ryan, in the north, but how I wish. And today we are joined by a very, very special guest. And I'm delighted to say that fresh from her MLB Network appearance, we have Ellen Adair, everybody. Yes.
Yeah. Hello. Hello. So happy to be here. And Alex, I love your motto for the holidays, which is the holidays, colon, it happens. Is it happens to the best of us or something like that?
Look, not everybody loves the holidays, okay? We've got our Scrooges, we've got our, you know, those who don't love to spread Christmas cheer and sing loud for all to hear, as my good friend Buddy the Elf would say. But I, for one, am a big holiday lover.
I think everybody in the UK needs this holiday after all the politics on and all of Brexit. We need this holiday and some good festive cheer to bring everyone back up, because it's been a rough year.
Absolutely nothing politically has been happening in the United States. Also,
not that I've seen.
nothing. Something about peaches, I think. Peaches.
Oh
and
yeah.
Cream.
Nice.
And
nice.
Something of the sort.
Nice.
But Ellen, what's in store for you at Christmas?
Well, I actually, in a way, Christmas has already started. I am visiting my in-laws in Iowa right now as
Beautiful.
We speak. Yes. But then we're going to be going back to New York for Christmas itself. My mom will be coming up from Philly. And that's because my husband is, he's also an actor, and he's leaving to go to do a theater play in Florida the day after Christmas. So we needed to be in New York for Christmas.
No way.
Awesome. Christmas in New York. I would love to experience a Christmas in New York.
Oh, Dave, you have
for a few days. My boss at work has just come back from New York and said it's you've got to do it. You've got to do it. Even just for a couple of 3 days, 3 nights, it's got to be done.
It can be really, really difficult to maneuver yourself. Like, it's,
yes,
it's very packed.
He said,
the universal opinion is that you should do Christmas in New York. So that just means that the universe is there in New York, like looking at the trees in Rockefeller Center.
Instead of Christmas in New York, just do like December 12th to 14th in New York. Like, just try and get there before.
That's the truth. That's true.
Because then you're screwed. I mean, you should not even enter the city limits past but like December 20th.
It's quite the same in some of our Christmas markets in Europe and here. Like, you go to Bath during the Christmas market, it's just get as early as possible because, again,
awesome,
it's absolutely packed. It's one of the best Christmas markets I've been to. Very, very different to what you have in the States, but really worth experiencing if you're over in the UK for Christmas time. And Ellen, MLB Network, man, you smashed it. How was it?
Oh, it was really great. Yeah, this is the second time that I've been on. I was on earlier this summer. I was actually on the very day, the momentous occasion that the Phillies acquired Jason Vargas. I was on the air.
What a day.
At the time.
Where were you? Oh.
Yeah, very exactly. Good. So I will always remember where I was when that amazing, amazing news came across the wire. It was really great. You know, it was a different, entirely different squad this time than last time. Last time I was on with Fran Charles, John Hart, and John Heyman, and had to answer for a time that I had tweeted every time John Heyman tweets, an angel loses its wings. I had to personally face John Heyman as we both watched that tweet be broadcast live on national television. Which I never thought I'd be on MLB Network. So
you just really love making friends with all the national writers.
I guess I do.
Bob Nightingale.
Yeah.
Jim Salisbury, watch out, he's coming for you.
Well, I have actually met Jim Salisbury.
He's a very sweet man.
Yeah, vis-a-vis the Bob Nightingale comment, it's really hilarious to me the response that it's gotten, because I still feel like I look back at myself and all I'm saying is, like, I'm not going to necessarily take this to the bank that this is going to happen. And everybody is acting like I, you know, like ran over his dog. I was sort of reminded of the response to the Max Muncy, if you don't want to see me hit the ball, like, go get it out of the ocean, like, doesn't quite track, actually. And I still remember on Effectively Wild, they were talking about the fact that apparently people in baseball land are just so starved for any amount of snappy comeback that they're like, oh my God, go get it out of the ocean. We're going to like put it on a t-shirt. I'm not saying that what I said was as good or even as snappy as that not quite logical comeback that Max Muncy had, but anyway.
It went viral. You know.
Yeah.
Slightly different show this one, guys, to our normal one. We're going to cover the winter meetings briefly, the ins and the outs, how we're looking so far. And then it's all about you guys on Twitter and Facebook. You've been getting your questions into us, so we'll go through those. And at the end, we're going to be trying a new game, which will be coming for our podcast next season, which I am excited about. It could be brilliant, or it could be chaotic and a disaster, or it could be both. It's all good fun. So, guys, Diddy. Big Diddy and Wheeler are in. We've got Gosling back, returning. Josh Harrison, Matuk. Also, minor invites to train in spring. We've also got Brian Price as a pitching coach. And I've written those down wrong. It's not Brian Price and Joe Price, is it? It's the two new coaches.
Joe Dillon.
God, I even prepped. And there it is as coaches. Guys, are we happy with thing dealing so far? It could be better at the moment, but all in all, I'm happy. I don't know about you guys. Ryan, happy so far?
Yes. I mean, I think, like most of us, we're happy with the signing of Zach Wheeler, and it seems like a reasonable contract. I know that the Nationals have, obviously, Gerrit Cole's on a different stratosphere, and that's something completely outside of most ball clubs' sort of purview even, but I think that Wheeler coming in on a, looking at what Strasburg got, who's older than Wheeler and obviously has had his own health concerns in recent years as well. And he's a fantastic pitcher and arguably better than Wheeler. But there's no reason that Zach Wheeler at his age, with his skills, he goes deep into games. I think I read that he went six or more innings in 23 of his 31 starts last season, which is something that the Phillies need massively so that they're not relying on the bullpen too much. Good first pitch strike rate, good career swinging strike rate. He gets his strikes, misses bats. I don't think I could be happier with that. I think that's the main positive for me. I think obviously Girardi likes Didi. We could discuss the relative merits of Didi versus Cesar, and obviously Didi's health. But overall, has this team improved? You'd like to think so on paper, at least. I don't know what the other guys think.
Ellen?
Oh, I mean, absolutely the team has improved. You know, I think that their main need coming into the offseason was starting pitching. And so I'm very excited about the Wheeler signing. You know, and I think that there has been a lot of prognostication about the fact that it's really based, the signing and the amount of money that he got was based on the underlying metrics, particularly his fastball velocity, which is so great. And sort of thinking, oh, there can be more made out of Zach Wheeler than we have seen. But I think that even if we just see the Zach Wheeler that we've seen over the last couple of years, you know, he's been over 4 wins the last couple of years. And so I think it'll be a signing even if he just continues to be as good as he has been. And I'm hopeful that Brian Price is able to maximize the skills that Zach Wheeler has, because I think with the skill set that he has, it is a total possibility. I'm not saying this will happen, but it's a possibility that he could be Steven Strasburg. And so, you know, the Phillies might have gotten an amazing deal. And, you know, honestly, after I saw the deals that were made for Strasburg and Gerrit Cole afterwards, I thought, oh, my God, the Phillies got a steal. And I was really expecting Bumgarner to go for a lot more than he did. So it was a surprise to me that he didn't. But I think that that's really, it reflects a kind of a difference in opinion for the kinds of contracts that people are handing out. You know, people don't want to pay for the Bumgarner that was when his underlying metrics look to be on at least a slight decline. I mean, obviously he's a very fierce competitor and I would take him on my team, but I'm more excited certainly to have Wheeler than I would be Bumgarner.
And do you think the Phillies are done with the pitching, or surely we need one more, don't we?
Oh, man. I mean, to me, this is the main off-season question, is that I really think that the Phillies need to get another starting pitcher. However, so much of the noise coming out of the organization, and I do say noise because I'm not entirely sure whether or not they mean it. I mean, they might, and maybe it's just that I so hope that they don't, but the noise has been that they're not going to go over the luxury tax, and they really only have, like, $2 million before they go over the luxury tax. So if they're not going to go over the luxury tax, then this is it. And that's very disappointing to me, particularly because, you know, up to, I think it's the first $20 million, it's just a 20% tax on the overage. So if they go over the luxury tax by $10 million, it's only 20% of $10 million. And that's just like pocket change to... Right. You know, to the owners of the of any baseball team, to be honest. So, yeah, it's disappointing to me if they don't add another starting pitching.
So, I for one, I do see another starting pitching move coming, even though I foresee a bit of faith still left in Nick Pivetta and Vince Velasquez. While it does frustrate me, I do see the potential there, and it's very hard to ignore. And when you have someone like Brian Price at the helm of your pitching staff, and, you know, he's going to be very, very instrumental in the development of these guys. Because, you know, Chris Young, who's a brilliant numbers guy, he was a guy who knew every last metric, had every last bit of information on all of his guys. But he wasn't a coach. He was a numbers man. And, you know, guys need this person that they can relate to and that they can turn to when they're confused. And that's, you know, someone that's going to work to their specific, you know, their needs and not just try to fit them into a mold. And that's something that I think people like Nick Pivetta, I think Vince Velasquez to a certain degree. I think Zach Wheeler is going to – Zach Wheeler already knows what he needs to do. He said in an interview with himself, he said all Garrett Cole did was use a four-seam instead of a two-seam and switch, you know, start spinning his slider a little bit more. And that's, you know, he said, I haven't tried that because it wasn't explained to me like that while I was in New York. So he knows what he needs to do already. So that is incredibly exciting. But, you know, I think Brian Press is going to be a huge reason as to, you know, the success or the failure of this pitching staff. And we will see what happens in the remaining days of, you know, we still have 2 months of free agency. But I think, you know, I think there's a lot that needs to be answered, and I think it will be answered in the coming weeks. If they decide to go over, they go over and they go big. If they don't, this is what we have, and we'll take two.
And we'll go with it. We'll go with it. It's sad. Cesar's gone, and Michael Franco's gone. I like them both. They got a bit of a slating on Twitter when they left, and I thought it's a bit slightly unfair actually, because Franco's still young. You know, he's still got a good chance of breaking out, and I really hope it works out for him at Kansas City. Interesting, actually, it's a young team at Kansas. He might fit in there really well, and I hope it does. Just not against us, but in general, I hope Franco. I know we shouldn't see him too much. Cesar still on the free agency, I believe. Not being picked up yet.
Not yet. I haven't heard a lot of rumblings either. So
yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is that it seems like it was just a market in which not very many people needed a second baseman, which, you know, the Phillies had tried to trade Cesar, I think, for a while, and they just never got the return for him that they wanted. And that was, you know, they decided it is too bad that they didn't trade him and get something back for him rather than just not tendering him. But, you know, at the same time, it seems like they every year they assess that and they decided, no, like he's a good player. We'd rather be just rolling him out every day. And that it was just that he got too expensive this year. And I think, you know, we can also see that with, for example, the Orioles deciding to non-tender Jonathan Villar, which I still don't understand.
So confusing.
Like why the Orioles wouldn't just want to have somebody to roll out, because it's
and
not
it hurt us. The Marlins offense doesn't actually look bad anymore.
They already had
the Phillies number, which I have my own private theory about. But anyway, so it seems like the Orioles couldn't get any kind of a trade partner for VR either. Also like a totally useful middle infielder. So, you know, I've sort of wondered like if Cesar is still hanging out there at the end of the offseason, if the Phillies might be like, you know, chip him a sort of a cheap deal to come back. It's a possibility.
That was my next question coming, actually. You've just answered it. If Cesar is still out there, would the Phillies go, hey, Cesar, one more year? And then we could be able to even trade him, or he tested out free agency again if he had a good year.
Well, you know what? There's still a vacancy on the bench. And I mean, that's assuming that Josh Harrison or somebody makes the roster straight out of spring training. But there are two infield vacancies. So, I mean, especially because you're adding the 26th man. So, I think they're probably going to look for a lefty. And I think Brad Miller really fits that, you know, that description. But I also think he's kind of searching for a starting job with a lesser team right now. So, we'll see if that ends up working out. I'd love to have him back. But they also, you know, if Cesar is willing to take that bit of a lesser deal. It's definitely a downgrade from the $11 million he was due in arbitration. But you know, if he's down to come back off the bench, I think, you know, why not? He'd
be a great bench player to have
again. Oh yeah, he has a bat. That's his best quality. He just he doesn't really handle the middle infield very well, and
or the base running.
Yeah. And his defense was a little bit questionable.
That's just such a shame. You take the guy who broke the Williamsport stolen bases record. And you'd hope there's some semblance of base running, you know, intelligence there, but it just didn't happen. It wasn't there. And, you know, it's a shame. But if he is willing to come back, then by all means, get him back. And I don't see it happening, though. I think he will get a starting job somewhere, probably to the Orioles or something like that.
I agree.
And I hope
he should.
For him.
He should.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah, he should start.
I think his bat is underrated. And another thing that's underrated about Cesar Hernandez is he plays. He never gets injured. I mean, like, you look at his plate appearances over the last four or five seasons, and that guy's on the field every single day. And for somebody taking a guy who probably has a little bit more power in the bat, potentially, I don't know whether his stolen base prowess is going to improve because he's just shown year upon year that his decision-making on the base pads is pretty poor. But the bat's good enough and the durability's good, and I think surely he's good enough to get a starting gig somewhere in the majors. Surely.
It's his hoping for both of them. But I'm delighted for Franco. He's got a team. And all the best to Michael and to Cesar if he's not returning. I hope so.
It's a sad park for his power, but other than that, I mean, I'm still rooting for him.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And his attitude is fantastic. You know, he brings a lot to the dressing room as well, because he was so popular.
When I spoke to Gabe after he was dismissed, he said that, you know, Michael is he was so instrumental to the locker room, just in that he got along with everybody. And, you know, you could always find him, like, dancing or, you know, he was always controlling the aux, is what Gabe said. So, you know, he's definitely going to be missed in that clubhouse. And I think he's going to have a lot of fun in Kansas City, though. I think that's a great young offense, and he slots right in. So,
good. Then on the flip side, to have Diddy and McCutcheon in the locker room this year, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, they've got some solid clubhouse and good
Harrison
times
too.
Replacements. Yeah. I love Jay Hay.
And Josh Harrison as well. He's meant to be quite a clubhouse guy.
If Josh makes the team, I mean, I was speaking to, actually, I'm trying to get him for an interview for the Good Fight, but I spoke to his agent yesterday, and then I got a little anecdote from Josh, and he was just like, I was like, are you excited to play for the film? And he was like, I just can't wait to be with my best friend again.
Oh, McCutch, of course, Pirates, yeah.
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 It's so exciting. Everybody's like, the one thing about the press conference that just absolutely got me elated was Didi's smile is infectious.
Oh,
and
man,
Hutch's smile is infectious. And Josh Harrison's smile is infectious. And they all have really cute kids. And I'm just so excited. I'm so pumped.
Even just to be in their presence must be fantastic. And of course, Diddy and Kutch were together at the Yankees for a brief time while Kutch was there.
For half a season, yeah.
Oh, fun times, fun to watch him in the bench, and smiles and positivity is infectious.
It will do us good.
It will. Right, to the questions then, guys. Here we go. First of all, starting with Jeffrey Branch and at Brett 5355. Similar sort of questions. Jeffrey asks, will Joe Girardi be as inclined to move Scott Kingery all over the infield like Gabe Kapler had done, or put him in one position, second base, and keep him there? And to tie it in, Brett says, how will the infield shake out with Diddy at shortstop, Kingery to third? Question. Segura to second? Question. Segura traded and a third baseman brought in via a trade to move Kingery to second base, or something else? Consider the possibilities. So let's talk infield, guys. Alex, what do you see Girardi doing, especially with Kingery?
I think so Gene Segura is definitely moving to second base. I think that is almost a certainty, just because, first of all, he's been working out there all off season, and second of all, I think that's just the most logical place to put him, especially with the acquisition of Didi, which I also think is brilliant, if I didn't already say that. I think that is such a good get. But Didi, his natural position is shortstop. He's an excellent defender. He always has been. I'm hoping his surgery didn't affect his throwing arm too much. I don't think it has, based upon, you know, the physical and things like that. But I'm excited to see his defense there. I'm excited to see Gene move back to his original position, which was second base. And I think Scotty will probably end up manning third until Alec Bohm is ready to come up.
Is that what you reckon? Do you reckon there'll be no trade for Bryant? We're going to hold off on third base and bring Bohm when he's ready?
I don't think Nolan Arenado and Chris Bryant are going to be traded anyway. I just don't think that is a plausible eventuality. I could go on forever about that, but I wouldn't look to those as a primary, a solution for what we have going on. So for right now, with what we have, I think Alec Bohm is going to be the future at third base, at least for a couple of years, because, yes, there are questions about his defense, but right now, as a 22-year-old male, he can play that position, and he plays it passably, which is all we need. So I think Kingery will be the stopgap there, and then he'll probably shift to center field, leaving Adam Haseley a little bit wandery, but, you know, there's so much conjecture in that eventuality that that's what I'll say for now.
Yeah. Ellen?
Something that was actually interesting for me to see, because I think that from Phillies fans, there's a sort of a great hue and a cry to want to put Kingery at second base, thinking that maybe his offense can really take off if he's been put in his natural position. But I'm hopeful that if he just sort of maybe sticks in one place, even for a little while, even if it's that mostly third base for the first part of the season until Bohm comes up, and then mostly center field for the second part of the season, something like that, that just a regular routine will help him, and he doesn't need to necessarily go back to second base. Because something that was interesting for me to see was that actually his defense was the best at third. Of any of the positions that he's played. I should pull it up, but I want to say off the top of my head, you know, it was like 8 defensive runs saved at third last year, something like that.
He only had 2 errors, I think, right?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm that makes me actually pretty excited to have that be the way that it shakes out, particularly because, you know, second base is where Segura played when he was on the Diamondbacks, and so I think that makes a lot more sense rather than asking the vet to do something that he's never done before.
And a new lean Gene Segura, isn't it? He's lost a lot of weight.
He's killing it right now. And another thing, just to tack on to what Ellen was saying, I mean, people are acting like having the versatility of Scott Kingery is a bad thing. Like, you know, having a Ben Zobrist 2.0 that can just shift to anywhere is such a valuable asset to any team.
Absolutely.
And I mean, it's so rare nowadays because so many people are focused on their bats and so many people are focused on, you know, all these different things that nobody, you know, there's nobody in the league that has Scott Kingery's versatility, I don't think. I mean, I can think of people that can go all around the infield, but someone that can play center field on any given day and then shift to third base in the middle of the game, I mean, that is, you know, and he can pitch too. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, we're looking at a guy that, you know, his versatility alone is worth the 6 years, $24 million that we're giving him. I mean, this is a kid that has a remarkably solid and sound mind for the game and also happens to carry a very impactful bat. I mean, he's a stud. He's a stud. And that versatility is so valuable. But I do agree that holding him down at one position will definitely help him clear his mind for a bit before we, you know, keep bouncing him around.
Absolutely. Ryan, anything to add on?
No, I think these guys have nailed it. Kingery's going to open the season at third base, and I am very excited to see this kid, and I want to see him in the lineup more often, regularly, like Ellen says, at one position, and the power's there. He's got speed on the base pads. I actually think his power, it showed itself last year, but there's a potential for this power to take a new leap, and with him playing, watch out, because this infield looks pretty scary right now. And you Gregorius has got power that Hernandez did not have. I think that's fair to say, quite easily. And Reese Hoskins is still a very good baseball player with a great batting eye, with a lot of power in that bat. So, you know, watch out. The infield could be good if it stays healthy.
And another important thing to remember is that we have a fully healthy and fully cleared mind, Gene Segura. You know, last year his grandmother passed away. This season, his grandmother who practically raised him, which was a really hard hit for him. And he also, you know, I'm sure he didn't feel too great about all the local media, you know, blaming him for Andrew McCutchen's injury.
Yeah, that went on and on as well, didn't it?
Yeah, it went on forever. And, you know, I'm very excited to see what a, not only a you know, healthy and ready to go, Gene Segura. But Gene Segura, that's probably hitting behind Andrew McCutchen again, which I don't know if anybody remembers, but before Kutch got injured, Gene was batting like 360 something. I mean,
yeah,
he's one of the best pure contact bats of you know, the last probably 5 or 6 years. He is a stellar hitter. So I'm excited to see what he brings to the table this season
And a Reese bounce back season as well.
Oh yeah,
great stuff. I'm getting excited for the new season already. On to pitching. It's Gordy says, out of Pivetta, Epi, and Velasquez, who do you think will take the biggest leap this year? Also, which Philly do you think could have a breakout year? Ryan?
Well, I mean, if it's the biggest leap, then if we take the guys that had really terrible years, then there's a... My answer to that, based on that, is Nick Pivetta. Although it depends what role he ends up in. I still think that there's something there. Now, don't get me wrong, it was rough. the secondary pitches just didn't work. The fastball's still good, but something was not right. But can this guy at his age, with the skills that he did show more so the season prior, can he contribute in a bullpen role if he's coached properly? Then, yeah, if he finds it. But I think it's quite clear that Zach Eflin's going to have a starting gig, and rightly so. He gets a good amount of ground balls, and he had really, apart from a rough patch after the good start, he had a good end to the season as well. And I think Zach Eflin's going to be the major player. Step forward, Pivetta, I think. It's a guess. It's an educated guess.
Of course. Ellen?
I'm sorry, what were the questions again? Oh. One is, who do I think is going to take the biggest step forward?
Out of Pivetta, Eflin, and Vince Velasquez, who do you think will take the biggest leap this year? Also, which Philly do you think could have a breakout year?
Great. So I think that in a way, I feel like Pivetta is the only one who can sort of take a leap, in my opinion. I feel like, personally, for Eflin and Velasquez, this is more or less who these guys are. And that's... I'm not trying to say anything mean about them. Part of the reason that I feel that way about Zach Eflin is actually because of the thing that he said when he was getting some success later on in the season last year was, when I was struggling earlier, it's because like they were trying to make me into a different kind of a pitcher, because obviously that works for some guys, and that wasn't working for him. So he was like, I know that sinkers are out right now, but like, I have a lot of faith in my sinker, so I'm just going to throw it. And then he had a lot of success, you know? And I think we saw him have success early in the season as well, with like pitching a couple of complete games. So, you know, I think what I really want for Eflin is just to sort of be able to sustain that level a little bit more. And maybe that is just him saying, you know, the equivalent of what Scott Kingery said this past year was, you know, in the year before that, in 2018, Scott Kingery had sort of been in his head. And then in 2019, he was like, no, I'm just going to play baseball the way that I know how to play it. So if Eflin maybe is just like, great, now I'm just going to pitch the way that I know how, maybe we will see a more consistent Zach Eflin. And that would be great. For Vince Velasquez, I also think, you know, his stuff is so great, but he really fundamentally only has two pitches, which is why I like him, want him on my team, but think that he would be better in the bullpen, because you can really only have him pitch 5 innings at most, because the third time through the order, just he just gets shelled always.
I think it's good for the Phillies need to tell Vince from the start, where is he, in the bullpen or is he in the rotation? Yep. Because I think when he was in the bullpen last year, he didn't really show what we were all hoping for, and I think that was more because he was in a mood, he didn't want to be in a bullpen, then he was being thrown from position to rotation to
mood.
Vince is a very passionate player. He expresses everything, you know. You can always see how he's feeling, and he just looked uncomfortable. He looked stroppy. You could tell it was starting to get to him, was messing around. So I hope the Phillies say to Vince, look, we're going to start you in the bullpen. Here's your role. Stick with that for a few months. And then I think we'll see a more settled and a Vince Velasquez the Vince that we know what he could do in the bullpen. Bring that out. 2-3 strong innings, shutout innings, burn that velocity in those innings. Alex, anything more on Vince?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I think for my personal breakout candidate, I would probably say Vince Velasquez. Just because if he does stick in the bullpen, I think you'll see a bump in velocity. I think you'll see, you know, the reason that he's so easy to pick up on that third time through the order is because, like Ellen said, he only has two fundamentally like workable pitches. And guys can only see that high fastball so many times before they start to pick up on it. And like, that's his putout pitch. That's the pitch that he turns to. He has a slider that's pretty good, that gets some swings. But like, that curveball and that slider are so close in velocity that, you know, one looks like a meatball and the other looks like a slightly faster meatball. You know, that's Vince Velasquez in a nutshell. But I think just coming out of the bullpen, that velocity is going to catch guys by a little bit of a surprise. And also, he's going to have two put-out pitches to turn to. He's going to be able to turn to his high fastball, and he's going to be able to turn to his slider because guys won't see that, you know, inning after inning after inning. So I think he'll have a really successful campaign in the bullpen if they keep him there. As for Pivetta, the ultimate thing that I'm focused on here, and Eflin too, I guess, Brian Price. That's the golden ticket. I mean, Brian Price specializes in sinkers and in splitters. Like that is his peanut butter and jelly. And I think, first of all, Zach Eflin and his sinker are going to be very exciting to watch, especially, you know, an arsenal like his where he has like 5 to 6 different pitches at his command. I think and with his kind of control, forget about it. He is Brian Price's like dream. And as for Pivetta, I mean, he just needs to keep his breaking stuff out of the zone. Because that it breaks out of the zone. And if he tries to make it break in the zone, then it's just going to get tacked. But if he can keep that velocity and keep himself under control and keep his emotions under control, he is going to be such a success. And he knows it and we know it, but it just, he needs the right direction. And I
think, Alex, do you, sorry to put it in there.
Go ahead.
Do you think there was too much expected and too much pressure on Nick at the start of last season, because he had a good spring and all the talk was breakout Pivetta. This guy is going to be second in rotation. He's going to absolutely kill it. And do you think that got to him a little bit and he tried too hard?
Yeah, I do. I think that would get to anyone's head, to be honest, especially when you're, you know, a rank 15 prospect in the system. And then everybody's all of a sudden talking about you as if like you're going to be the next ace of the team. Like, that's going to get to anybody's head. And especially when you have your pitching coach telling you, look, I want you to be an Astros pitcher. I want you throwing high fastballs at 100 miles an hour. And I want you then throwing breaking pitches and fooling everybody. That's not how you do things. That's not how that works with, especially a guy like Nick Pivetta, who is of such a, he's very stubborn. He's, to put it lightly, he is very, you know, he wants to do things his way. He wants things to get done, and he wants to do them, wants to play by his rules. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, good for him when he does eventually ascend to that upper echelon of talent, if he does. You know, that's going to be a very admirable quality of his. But as long as he can keep his head under control, and as long as he can really learn from Brian Price, and this can be said for all of our pitchers, I think they are going to have a very successful campaign. And I really hope that does end up happening. It's got to break, right? But I very much hope it does.
Can I say two things?
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, I mean, one of the things for Pivetta, I think, has always been kind of almost his, I don't know, mental toughness, catching up with his pitching stuff. And I felt like, you know, this year, just watching him pitch, it seemed to me like he was doing, even when he got shelled, even when something happened, even when, you know, he got a comebacker off the shoe or something like that, it seemed to me this year like he was doing a better job mentally of just clearing his mind and getting back into the game. So I'm sort of hopeful that he, you know, he's been improving himself in that way. And then this is not about Nick Pavetta, but I still wanted to pick my like potential bounce back.
Sure, yeah.
For
yeah.
The Phillies. And I'm going to pick a hitter, and I'm going to surprise everybody by picking somebody who wasn't on the Phillies last year and picking Didi Gregorius. Because, of course, Didi Gregorius was not like great last year when he came back for the Yankees. It was only 82 games, but he had an 84 WRC plus and batted .238. But the reason that I'm very hopeful for him is that it seems to me like a lot of that had to do with the fact that he was sort of pressing at the plate. You know, yeah. So for example, in his excellent 2018 season, he walked 8.4% of the time and struck out 12.1% of the time. But in 2019, he walked only 4.9% of the time and struck out 15.4% of the time. So he was striking out more and he was walking less. So obviously that will lead to a lower batting average. But the good news is that like the batted ball data was still really great. It seems like he had an average exit velocity of 88.2, which was above league average. So when he was hitting the ball, he was still hitting it very well.
Yeah.
So that just speaks to me of, you know, he didn't get a spring training. He was just kind of maybe rushed back from Tommy John and just wasn't as used to seeing the ball. But I think that that is obviously, you know, a skill that he has as somebody who throughout his career has had a pretty low strikeout rate. So I'm hopeful that we're going to get a really great season out of Didi.
Oh. And to tack on to that too, Ellen, actually on the segment before yours on MLB Network, I think it was, they were talking about Didi and how they analyzed his 2019 footage and how he's late, you know, because he usually feasts on those high and inside fastballs. That anybody is silly enough to throw to him, he just demolishes those. And in 2019, he was late on all of them because he hadn't, you know, I can only imagine coming in, you know, what is that, 80 games into the season, and then having to stare down, you know, upper 90s fastballs, like, you know, without any spring training, without getting those, like, you're playing catch up all year, and that's so difficult to do. So I can only imagine what it's going to be like with a full spring training and a full, you know, he's just such a talented baseball player, and I'm very excited to have him. And also with Nick Pavetta, you guys remember when he threw that complete game, how just relieved he was?
I was there. That was against the Reds.
When he dropped the F-bomb on TV with
Reds. Yeah, I was,
like,
yes.
That was the best, and it was because like he finally proved to himself that he could do that. That was something that he could do. So imagine what it's going to be like when he gets some confidence in the majors. I'm so excited for him.
That was one of the highlights of my season. Not only being there being in Philly, but to watch Pavetta like finally deliver what we all know he has and what all know he could do. And for him, how much, like you just said, how much it meant to him. Was a real huge moment, and I was really happy for him. That was one of the highlights of my season just gone. On to Facebook. Right, let's try and a bit more quick fire because I'm a bit wary of time. As always, Drew Asher says prospects that could come into the majors either to start the season or during the season. Ryan?
I think obviously the one that we've touched on already is Alec Bohm, who can come in. He probably will come in at third base. That might not last throughout his whole career because I think Brent Hershey of Baseball HQ has even tweeted in recent days talking about his range, his footwork, and his throwing motion as concerns. Now, the Phillies will hope that he can improve on those early in the season in the minors. And maybe he'll get a little extra time, especially if Kingery starts well. So if Kingery starts well, that could be a real boon for the Phillies, just for Bohm's development. Other than that, I mean, I think fans and us still have a bit of a concern about this rotation. We haven't touched on Jake Arrieta, but he has to be a bigger concern than Zach Eflin or possibly even Nick Pavetta at this point, because I'm not entirely sure. And I'm not hating on Jake here, and I hope he has a good season. But the injuries, the the performance, I mean, I said earlier that decline doesn't always sort of precede more decline, but when it's decline, 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 then you might want to start worrying about decline. So it'll be interesting to see. The point here is whether Spencer Howard is sort of fast track to the majors, and that's possible because the kid's special. It's also possible that Adonis Medina, who didn't have a good season last year, but it is also possible that he is in the majors at some point this season. And I'd also just give an older guy who pitched very well last season is Damon Jones. And I don't know what the Phillies' plan is for Jones, but that's a name to watch out for because he can get his strikeouts and he could contribute. Mickey Moniak, if Adam Haseley could get to the majors in the time that he did, then if there's a few injuries in center field, Moniak's defensive prowess in center could mean that he gets to the majors before perhaps people thought as well. So I would watch out for that because he could be a useful piece for the Phillies as the season wears on. So they're the names to watch out for from my point of view.
Brilliant. Interesting. Ellen?
Well, how brief do we want to keep this? I think that those are the two guys that we're most likely to see. I think that it's also quite possible that we see some folks from the minors as bullpen arms, particularly if the Phillies don't acquire any other relief pitchers. You know, they did on their 40-man roster, they did decide to protect Mauricio Lavera, Garrett Clevenger, and Christopher Sanchez. And so it could be that they're just sort of hoping that they can scratch those lottery tickets and maybe one of them will be a usable reliever. You know, I think that I'm really hoping we see Spencer Howard. I think it's partly that he missed time with a shoulder injury and only pitched 71 innings and has never pitched above double A. On the other hand, you know, sometimes it's easier for pitchers to make the jump from double A than it is for hitters. And, you know, in that small sample size, he was also completely tearing it up. You know, he had like a 2.03 ERA and a 0.83 whip and 11.9 K per nine with just two walks per nine. And he didn't really regress any when he went to double A from single A. So that's great.
And Alex?
All right, I'll do a list. I won't so for starters, definitely Spencer Howard, of course. Connor Siebold could also be faster to the majors than Spencer, depending on how they want to play their cards here and what role they're looking for these guys to fill. And also look for Damon Jones, like Ryan mentioned. He, just a quick side note on him, he's been the most called about prospect in the Philly system, from what I've heard, or the most inquired about in trade, just because they know he's attainable. But watch out for him. He is very, very talented. And he has a disgusting two-pitch mix. As well as that, for hitters, look for Alec Bohm. Look for Austin Listy. Look for Malquin Canella, maybe. These are just off the top of my head. I apologize. Definitely look for Mickey Moniak. Maybe Josh Steven as well for a bench bat. And then bullpen. Let's see. Definitely Brogdon, Kyle Doughy, and Garrett Clevenger for sure. I'll give those three. And J.D. Hammer and Edgar Garcia and all those guys that we saw last year as well.
And Davey Grewon should be a backup to JT.
We will see. Hopefully, he can. Right now for Davey, I'm seeing more of a trade in his future just because they're willing to retain Andrew Knapp at 800K. And we need to see a little bit more defensively from Davey. I definitely agree with the haters there. But, I didn't see exactly what I wanted to from Davey when he came up for that short stint. And he only started two games. But, I mean,
yeah.
I would have definitely liked to see a little bit more defensive prowess there. So and he said it himself in an interview last year. He said that his defense now has to catch up to his offense, which was not the case 3 years ago. But now, you know, he's got to level out. So we'll see.
Right. I briefed you guys on this question last night, and it was the one from John O'Donohue, who says the Phillies team of the decade. Now, how am I going to do this? Shall I just go round you all with different positions, and you name your player for that position? Should we do that?
Mm. So,
all right, let's do
it. Let's go with catcher. So, Ryan, your catcher.
Is that statistically or like my personal like thing? Okay, Jack.
Go personal.
My personal preference is always related to statistics anyway, so let's go with JT. I think that it's a great signing, very exciting. I'll take Real Musa.
Ellen, catcher.
Oh, okay. I will also take Real Muto, even though it is a wealth at catcher with Chooch too. But yeah,
yes.
You can't go wrong.
And Alex, your catcher, Chooch or JT? It's basically those two, isn't it?
If Mike Lieberthal counted, I might be. it's definitely JT. It's got to be JT.
Right, and first base, Ryan. Do you want me to come back to you? Do you want me to start with Alex?
No, it's cool. Just carry on. I'll still take Reese right now.
Ellen?
I will too, given that I assume that we're going to get the latter half of Ryan Howard and not the first half.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So true.
And Alex, your first baseman?
I'm going to stay true to Ryan Howard. I like nice. The guy. And it's also, lefty power, that's good stuff to have. So I'm going to stick with Ryan Howard here.
And Alex, your shortstop.
Oh, come on now. Jimmy.
Well, is it going to be easy for
Gotta
everybody,
be.
Isn't it?
Gotta
Can we just skip the middle infield now? We know the answers, do we?
Yeah.
Which is going to be a clean sweep.
Yes.
Well, then go to third base.
Third base. Ugh. Right. Alex, you sound excited for this one. Your third baseman.
Placido Polanco, please. Ooh. That is my choice. There is not a lot of options. If I could put Juan Pierre at third base, maybe I'd take Juan Pierre, but I don't know. Right, it's probably Placido Polanco, just by pure contact.
Ellen, your third baseman.
You know what? I'm going to take Scott Kingery.
Nice!
For a slightly different look. And, you know, also, I mean, Polanco had a great season in 2010.
2010, right? Yeah.
I
think he regressed to like it was him or Michael Young, like, and either which one you pick, you're getting a bad latter half of your career.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not taking Mike Franco. I can't.
I unfortunately can't. Yeah. Like, yeah, it would be
have to be. Please, like, come on.
But Ryan, you're gonna take Franco, aren't you?
Yes, come on, yeah. I'll take Franco.
Nice.
We go with three different. I was going to go Kingery as well, just like statistically speaking, and the excitement of the player. But we've had such a rough 10 years, and Franco's been there for most of those 10 years. So, like, let's just say thanks for the time that you were here and happy days.
Yeah, and you get Ryan's vote into the team of the decade. Alex, your three outfielders.
Oh, come on. I'm going with Bryson Wright, of course. I think I'm going to go with Shane Victorino in center. Just because, other than...
Because Shane Victorino.
Yeah, enough said.
Good speed. And then left field, it's been pretty dry. I mean, like, I'm not going to say John Mayberry Jr., but, like, you know, if I can get... Can I cheat? Can I have 2010 Kutch? Can I have that? Or do I have to take 29?
I think they have to be on
either
the
way, I'm taking Kutch. Either way, I'm taking Kutch. I think Kutch was absolutely brilliant in his few games that we did get to see him. But he was absolutely brilliant, and I just love him.
Ellen, who would be your outfield?
So I'm taking Bryce Harper, and I'm taking Shane Victorino, but yes. I am going to take Raul Ibanez.
Yes!
Yay!
That's my pick! Three for three!
That's nice. I forgot forgot about Raul.
Yes.
Too late, Alex. Too late.
Oh,
you can skip me at the same as Ellen. Thank you very much.
So poor old Ben Revere doesn't get a shout now.
Oh, come on.
Sorry.
Yeah, go hit one.
You know who else I... Like, I don't know if we're drafting a bench for this as well, but like, I definitely want Jeff Francoeur on my team.
Yes,
I love Jeff Francoeur.
Yeah,
and Blanco. Oh, yeah. Blanco wasn't a bad utility to come in.
Totally. Blanco. Yes, Andres Blanco. Yes.
Oh man! Wow.
Can I have Greg Dobbs?
Yeah, we need Greg Dobbs. We need upstairs.
Hunter Pence.
Oh,
100 pence. Yeah.
100 pence you can probably
I love how Jason Worth has just been completely written off the map.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Is that like never
really?
Hang our heads in shame, of course.
I definitely could have taken a lot better left fielder. I was taking the defensive
side. You're done.
That was kicking a hope. That was good. Two more questions.
Jason Worth is my, like, one of my stepmother's favorite players of all time, and she's going to be so disappointed in me.
Oh,
well, can we
wait. Oh, no, 2010 still counts as this decade. Yeah. I was like, wait.
Yeah.
We're just taking the 2011 rotation as our all-time, right?
Except for plus Nola.
Nola. I was going to say Blint. Pictures. Nola's going to be.
And then put on Aaron Nola.
Yeah.
No Jason Vargas, son.
Or Drew Smyly. They all miss the cut.
No, we already have Drew Smyly. Cliff Lee's already on that rotation.
Dave Lewis wants to... sorry, go on, Alan.
Don't say that about my Cliff Lee.
It had to be done. We might get him back this year. We'll see.
I actually like Drew Smith, but...
I do too. He's very composed. I like him a lot.
Dave Lewis...
He's really well-spoken.
Oh,
sorry. Go, Dave.
Right. Dave Lewis wants us to discuss what would constitute a successful season for the Phillies in 2020. Whew. Alex, what would be a successful Phillies season for you next season?
Well, seeing as the Braves and the Nationals have taken significant steps back and are significantly worse teams than they were last year. I have to throw my Braves slide in, and I have to throw my Nationals slide in. But honestly, I don't think I'm going to keep this short, but I don't think the Nationals understand how instrumental Anthony Rendon was to their run. And I also think that the Braves, if they can't get Josh Donaldson, are in severe trouble, especially because I don't see Chris Bryant or Nolan Arenado really going anywhere. And if they do, I don't see them being able to retain them. So, you know, I think I would like to win the division. I would like to make the playoffs at the very least, and I'd like to win the division at the that would be successful for me if we won the division.
Yeah, Ellen.
I mean, that would definitely be successful. I think maybe not quite as optimistic, or maybe not quite as down on the strength of the Nats and Braves, alas. So I would think that success would be winning the wild card, and at least making it to the postseason.
Yeah, well, the Nats won the wild card and won the World Series. So who knows who it could lead to.
Once you get there, anything can happen.
I mean, the Nats team was very good. I don't necessarily think that, like, if the Phillies had won the wild card instead, that they would have won the World Series. I think that's a bit of a valid argument.
Jason Vargas would have at least been as good as Steven Strasburg. I don't know what you're talking
about. And Ryan, what would constitute a successful season for you?
I think if they get a playoff spot and even if they don't win that wild card game, I think that would probably, it would be a step forward. So I can't see how I could say anything different. I'll also agree with Alan. I don't really think that the Nationals and the Braves have taken significant steps back, especially if they do. I mean, there's a very real chance that the Nationals are going to go and get another hitter. There's a very real chance that the Braves are going to go and get another hitter. And when you've got a top three in the rotation like the Nationals do, the Braves have depth throughout the organization. I think it's going to be a tough season in the NL East. I really do. So if we make the playoffs, count me in. I'll be happy with that.
And we need to get past the Marlins as well next year.
We'll revisit this in a couple of months when we'll see what happens.
Last question, Matt Snead says, how would you sell the Phillies to someone who's never watched baseball but is intrigued? Which is a genuine question because I know who Matt is. So, Alex, how would you sell the Phillies to someone who's never watched but is intrigued?
I think there is a real meaning behind, and this is so cliche, but like there is a real meaning behind the city of brotherly love. And to me, that means that, you know, when you have a sibling, when you have a brother, you have a sister, like you're not going to love them all the, or not love them, but you're not going to be happy with them all the time. You know, you're not going to sit there and you know, always, you know, be positive towards them and sending them positive energy. You know, sometimes you're going to give them crap. You're going to give them, you know, you're going
to. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And so, you know, I think if you want a sports culture where, yeah, they're going to piss you off a lot, but when the winning is good, the winning is amazing. And if you really want to step into a stadium and feel like you can connect with every single one of these people that are surrounding you right now, wearing red and screaming loudly, whether that be in a positive or negative way, then the Phillies are for you.
Lovely.
Yeah. I think that I would sell the Phillies in particular as if you want to join a fandom of a franchise that is passionate and genuine. And yeah. And I think, you know, representative of just sort of what real kind of regional fandom is.
Yeah.
Because there are plenty of sort of more famous baseball franchises that attract fans from all over or attract fans that aren't really fans. I don't know. Like, I feel like there are
plenty of people who
wear Yankees hats or Dodgers hats and like they don't really know that much about their teams and they don't really maybe even know that much about baseball. But I feel like Phillies fans are real baseball fans and they're, you know, they're very invested in their team, even if that investment, and this is not me, I'm sometimes an atypical Phillies fan in this way that I love them kind of like no matter what, but yeah, they're very invested in how the team is going, even if they're like, even if that is a negative investment.
Absolutely spot on. And that's the same for UK side Philly fans. The one thing in common we all have is the passion and the investment we all have. It doesn't matter where you meet Phillies fans from. I know some in Brazil, France, Australia, and of course Canada and the States, and we all have the same passion, which just cannot be beaten. And I know it's going to sound biased, but it's not the same anywhere else as the Phillies passion, the Philadelphia. You both summed it up brilliantly. Now I'm feeling all, come on, Phillies. Sort of. Ryan, anything to add?
Well, if you're from the UK, and I don't know if this listener who's asked the question is Dave. He is. Okay, so those guys there, Alex and Ellen, have touched on the passion and the way that this franchise is, and that's absolutely spot on. But if you're from the UK, this is a city on the east coast of America. Your flights are relatively cheap. If you want to go to Cincinnati or LA instead, then good luck, start saving your pennies. I know that sounds a little pragmatic, but the divisional rivals are fairly close by, so your road games are pretty good. And if you like food, passion, a crazy mascot, then this is just such a fun organization to get involved with. And just look at what we're doing now, this podcast that has so many listeners that are asking interested questions, engaged, sort of passionate, well-rehearsed questions. Four of us having a good time near Christmas talking about the Phillies. We're not even playing baseball until April or whenever it is. So this is crazy. Go Phillies. Fantastic. Come on board.
And I'd add to that, all that is fantastic. Also, being East Coast, the games are on at a better time than the West Coast games. Like, midnight starts aren't as bad as 3 a.m. starts. We get a lot of course, you can see every game on MLB Network, MLB TV. The best mascot in sports, we touched on that. And it is a fun organization, actually. It really is. And Matt, I'm gonna tag you in loads of Philly stuff next year just to get you on board and give you a feel. I'm gonna find some videos on YouTube, or just play you the 08 World Series and because Citizens Bank. I wasn't a fan back then. I wasn't a fan until 2012. But that video gives me chills. Oh, everything brilliant. From the World Series. Man, I'd love to experience that. I'd love to experience the playoff game or a winning season.
It's coming.
I've never seen a winning season. It'd be great. All right, let's have some fun with this game then. Right. So this is where the fun starts. So next year we're gonna bring in a game where you, the listeners, are gonna come on and take on Alex and Ryan, the dream team duo, and win yourselves some UK Phillies goodies. Now, Ellen, you get the privilege of being the first one to try this.
Oh no, okay.
It wasn't the response I was looking for, but
guys. I'm really bad at games. There's only one game that I've ever been good at, and that's, I forget what it's called, but it's the game where you, like, make up fake definitions for a word. I'm very good at that game.
That's a good game. People should get that back out this Christmas. That's a good game.
That's the only one. So I'm handing the home team a victory, most likely. Okay.
But that's the point, because I want people to come on and it to be a challenge. I want to come on and have to try and beat Alex and Ryan.
His expectations levels are so high, Alex.
I want them to earn that UK Phillies t-shirt. No, they've got to come on. It's a money can't buy prizes, this. They've got to earn it. So what am I going to do? I'm going to ask Alex and Ryan 5 questions. Then I'm going to ask Ellen 5 questions. Different questions, not the same, obviously. And then after that, I'm going to ask you both 5 questions together. I don't want you to hesitate. You've got 5-second limit on your question answers.
Oh, okay.
Right? And then when it's all of you together, you can't just, I want you to say your name and answer, but you can't say your name and then go, and stutter. You've got to know the answer. I want you to bang.
Okay. The poor souls that have stuck with us this long are going to witness an absolute car crash. Let's do it.
Hey, this spent. I was half an hour. Right.
It's not you I'm worried about.
ladies first. And okay. Ellen, your first question is, who wears jersey number 40?
I have no idea.
Me neither.
This is boring.
It was Adam Hazley. How many home runs did Harper finish on last year?
Oh, 35?
Yes! Well done. 35! Well done. Point to Alan. Lovely. Right, A, B, or C. Neris recorded how many saves? Was it A, 27, B, 28, or C, 30?
I'm going to go 27.
Oh, it was 28.
Yep. Should always go for the middle one, I guess. Oh.
this is tough, right? Which three players, or how many of the three players can you name that hit a home run in the opening game against the Braves?
Oh, I know.
Hoskins?
Yes.
Harper?
No.
No. Okay,
one of them was on fire at the start of the season.
McCutcheon?
Yes. That wasn't the guy I meant, but there's one more as well. Started the first month of the season.
Oh, Franco.
They're the three. I had no hand in that. And and how many games back did the Phils finish from the wild card spots?
Oh, I got sad and stopped looking at that number.
Yeah.
It was a lot more than I even thought it was going to be.
It was for me when I was researching the question.
Was it like 11?
Well, no, it wasn't that high.
It wasn't that high. Maybe 5.
No, 8.
8.
Oh, I was
8.
Always go 8. For the middle.
Your own answer. Right, Alex, Ryan, are you boys ready?
Yeah, maybe let's give it a shot.
Yeah. Right. Who wears number 23?
I knew you'd do that.
You know, Alex?
No researching. Right, time's up.
No,
Jay
Bruce. Yeah.
Oh, we got to be quick. Alex, we timed out.
I knew it was an outline.
He was helping Ellen. Did you notice? Giving hints. He timed us out.
Not messing about here. Hoskins finished on how many home runs?
29.
Ooh, correct.
Yeah, there you go. Nola's final ERA was either A. Well, you're wrong.
Go ahead.
No, I'm not arrogant enough to answer before he gives me options. I'm waiting, Dave.
A, 4.03, B, 3.96, or C, 3.87?
3.87.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It was one of those angular numbers.
All right, here we go. Who was on base when Harper hit his walk-off grand slam?
What?
You have to name three.
Three of them. There's three of them.
Hoskins definitely was.
Hoskins was one, yeah.
So if
I'm trying to think of the pylon.
We must have had Cesar on base.
No, you're not having too many guesses. Don't waste them up.
Oh, really?
That was one.
I
think both of them were pinch hitters. That's all I'm saying.
Phil Gosselin.
Nope, that's another guess, right? You got two guesses left. You've got to get these right.
It's got to be three strikes and you're out policy.
Yeah, that's a good one.
No,
three strikes.
Jay Bruce wouldn't have been on base.
Is that your final answer, Jay
Bruce? No. Ryan, help me.
A pinch hitter.
I had such high expectations for you two.
Who's he bringing?
This one's hard.
Andrew Knapp.
No, as your final guess, it was. It was.
He wasn't on base all season.
Yeah, Andrew Knapp. Yeah, think about it.
Sorry, Alex.
you're looking for Roman Quinn, who was on second, and on third base was Brad Miller.
You're brutal, Teddy. These are tough.
I had to YouTube that as well. That was all my time.
Nobody watches that part. Everybody just watches the actual hit.
Yeah, to be fair, it was a good inning. I didn't realize how deep Harper was into account as well, and how many foul balls he hit before.
Oh my god,
ran.
It was the best moment of this year.
Nine pitch at bat, right?
Yeah, I still get goosebumps. Good stuff. From John Crook, yes.
What's our last one, Dave?
Question five: how many games back did the Phillies finish from the Braves?
They had 96 wins, right? So.
And we had 81. We finished bang on 500. So what is that?
It's 15 back.
It's 16 back.
Oh, wait. Oh, jeez.
Oh, Alex.
Did they have 97 wins?
Didn't they? No. Let me double check.
Oh, no,
now you're making me doubt myself.
No, because we have to win. They have the even with them. So
yeah, that's 16.
One, technically, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a 15-win difference. Apologies.
Right. So, five questions where you're both in. Ellen leads by 4-3. Oh, come on, Ellen. Right. If you
really?
Know it. Yeah. No, yeah, really. 4-3. You got...
Viewers must be absolutely sweating it coming on to face me and Alex.
I any trivia, even if it's something that I seem to know something about, always gives me indigestion.
Here we go. Ellen's just five questions away from a big shock. Already, and the boys are going to have a loss already to the name. Right, if you know the answer, say your name, and then I want an answer straight away. I don't want no stuttering or thinking about it. Right, question one. In the last decade, how many times have the Phillies finished above 500?
Ryan.
Alex.
Ryan, go on.
Two.
Oh, he's right. He's right.
Why are you sad about that, Dave?
No, I'm not sad. No,
he's sad that there's only two times.
Yes. Yeah, I'm surprised with. I'm thinking it might be one, actually.
It was 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a fan. And then I started becoming a fan in 2012. It's a correlation there. Right. I forgot to say, have you guys got a pen and paper near you?
No.
Although I just thought like this question doesn't really work.
What are we doing now? Algebra or something?
Nah. Well, it was like I was going to give you some sort of an anagram of a player's name.
Oh, my.
So, this is the player's full name. And I'm going to give you the letters right now.
Lord.
Letters are, first one, C-A-J-O-B. Middle name,
Is this JT Realmuto? Out.
It is! It is!
I was just like,
yeah! Everyone put your pen and papers away. We don't need it. Ellen, save that question.
What's his full name, though, Ellen?
Oh, Jacob Thomas Realmuto.
Close. Tyler. Really close.
I always call him Just Terrific Realmuto or Jonathan Taylor Realmuto. Or Jump and Throw Realmuto.
I love these names. These are all bonus points. I love all these. Yes.
I love it.
What number will Joe Girardi wear next season?
Oh, shit.
Language.
Whoever's typing, stop that typing.
We need an advisory on this podcast now.
I'm watching you.
Alex panicking, swearing over the...
I covered it too.
You got 5 seconds.
Viewers are screaming the number of their podcast.
I can't remember numbers.
I can't remember either.
Time up, 25.
I was literally going to get.
So with 2 questions to go, Ellen 5, the boys 4. Ooh. If Ellen gets this, she's won it, and she's won a UK Phillies T-shirt. Yay! Ooh. Oh, I know.
Sure do want a T-shirt. The pressure is on.
Who was behind Neris in with the most number of saves for the Phillies in 2019?
Alex,
go on. Oh,
I'm going to do the...
I need a name, Alex.
Sir Anthony Dominguez.
No. Alex is frozen out. Ryan and Ellen.
Who was it?
It's a surprise. I was very surprised.
Ryan.
Yeah. Go on, Ryan.
Oh, sorry. I think I cut out there. Did Ellen give an answer?
No, you did cut out. Just made a sound of not knowing what it was.
I'm going to say Pat Neshek.
You are correct. It's 5-5. Final question.
She'll be good.
Neshek, 3 saves. This is it. Sudden death. This is brilliant for the game. It's the drama now. I need some Who Wants to Be Millionaire music in the background.
That was question. Very good.
That was. this is a low budget podcast, as you can tell. We do all the sound effects.
No one's listening anymore, Dave. They've all left. I promise.
Hey, you'd be surprised. I may have to cut this podcast in half. I do 2 segments. Right.
There might be final. A dog listening somewhere.
Yeah, and not by choice either.
Yes, somebody just left it on.
Final question. Who had the most hits for the Phillies in 2019? Go on.
Cesar Hernandez.
Oh, he's done it. He's done it. With how many for the bonus point?
160?
Ooh, not far. 171.
Okay. Well.
So Alex and Ryan are the winners.
T-shirt.
No. You guys win nothing because sorry.
The home team.
It's just your pride is restored.
Yeah, all right. Whatever.
If anybody wants to come on and take on Alex and Ryan next season, let me know and we'll get you on the show. Be good to have more fans on.
We sadistically plan it for ultimate upset and heartbreak. Like, I'm sorry to say, like, it was planned.
I thought that worked.
I mean, all
well.
You're really playing for is depriving somebody else of a T-shirt. Just to be clear.
Bottom line. Very seriously.
Yeah, you'll be surprised. These boys, I can hear Alex's competitive edge take coming out.
Oh, yeah. It was there.
Guys,
T-shirt, Dave, you Grinch.
Ellen, you win a T-shirt. All right, it's Christmas, Ellen. Ellen, you win the T-shirt. Congratulations.
I was an English major. I'm good at analysis, not facts.
There you go. There you go. And she's got a book of excuses as well. It's perfect. Right, guys, thank you very much. That's the show. Just got
Happy
an hour
Christmas,
and a half.
Everybody.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Ellen, thank you so much, Ellen, for coming on and giving us your time. Really appreciate it. I know it's an awkward time of the day for you guys as well over there.
No, not at all. It's the holidays, so there's no such thing as an awkward time of day.
Ellen, will you come back on during the season?
I will if I don't have to play the game again. I'm kidding.
No guarantees.
I would love to.
This game's going to take off.
You're the best. You're really awesome. Guys, if you don't follow her, Ellen Adair on Twitter. He's the bomb.
Oh, he's beating me
Lots
to it.
Lots of good
yeah.
poetry.
It is Ellen underscore Adair because
oh Alex, like, one
underscore.
Job.
Ellen Adair, just at Ellen Adair is like, I can't remember what it is, but it's like a mother-daughter team that makes jewelry or something. Oh. But just
my website domain is taken by some artist who passed away a long, long time ago, and it's just still being paid for somehow.
Wow.
It's sad.
That was a random. Yeah. That was random, Alex.
Ellen, there's a new movie, right? I did have a brief research of you, and we're looking at this is a Halloween movie with Omar Epps out on Amazon recently. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I this past fall, a film came out which stars Omar Epps and me, which is ridiculous but true. yeah, it's like a Halloween themed slasher movie, and so if that's what you're in the mood for the holidays, yeah. You can now pick it up on DVD. In addition to, I think it's still available on demand.
I'm pretty sure you can pick up in the UK as well. It's called Trick. If I research
that is right. Yes, it is called Trick.
There you go, guys, in your DVD. I'll look out for that. It'll be around somewhere in the UK. If anyone finds it, let me know. And then we'll get Ellen to sign them.
Anytime, yeah.
That'd be great. Ellen,
especially if you pay for me to come to the UK to sign your DVD. Okay, that would be the best.
Yeah, low budget, like I said, Ellen. Could be a problem. Guys, have a fantastic Christmas. To everyone listening and all the support we've had on the podcast throughout the year, thank you so much. We started literally our first podcast, we got 20 people, I think, and now we're way over 300 so on average. So it's amazing support. Thank you so much. Keep an eye on the website. It's going to be updated, which is www.ukphillies.com. Of course, plenty of Facebook and Twitter activity. We'll see you in the new year, guys. Spring will soon be here. Have a great Christmas, guys. Ring the bell.
Ring the bell.
Ring the bell.
Awesome.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.